Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hyperthetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hyperthetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hyperthetical, Hyperthetical.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Will.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons & Dragons, from ludicrous languages to legendary liches. And today, we're talking about Leonin.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Will.
How you doing today?
It's a new year.
It is a new
year.
We
got a new theme. Did it last week.
We did do it last week.
Sort of.
Yeah. It's been a long time since we've covered a race on the show.
Yeah.
And since the release of Mythic Odysseys of Theros this last year, I've been wanting to and decided that it's about time we start covering a lot of the more recently released topics, considering how many of the classic topics we've talked about up to this point.
Yes. New content.
Yes.
I like
it. So, as well as Year of the Beholder, I want this year to be a year where we catch up on all the stuff we missed. So, Ravnica, Theros, Eberron, Tasha's, and whatever new source books come out will get a much higher priority than they have been thus far.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of the basics on the show at this point. We've covered the dragons. We've covered the giants. We've covered the blood war.
Yeah.
And we will continue to do
so. Updates on the blood war here at the Dungeon Cast.
This we do like Year of the Dragon, but it's all inside of year forever of the blood war.
Yeah, forever. Century of the blood war.
Century of the blood war.
There's just so much to talk about with this game that even after 200 plus episodes, I feel like we've barely scratched the surface. So without further ado, let us dive into the Leonin.
All right.
So the Leonin is a new race to Dungeons & Dragons, canonically exclusive to the Magic the Gathering setting of Theros. Mm. Theros is a high magic setting, heavily inspired by the stories of Greek mythology. It is a world of gods and monsters, of heroes and legends, and of journey and destiny. This may be my new favorite setting and has inspired me to develop my own setting based on mythos of the ancient world. But I digress. Today we are focusing specifically on the Leonin, but unavoidably, context about these guys will need to be explained as well, since we've kind of not talked about Theros at all. There's so much, they're so instilled into the setting that there's a lot of it that will just need to be explained.
So this will be like a Theros mini Alexix Theros,
so
sort
much,
of.
Much like how we tackled Eberron, as we detail out each new topic from the setting, the bigger picture of said setting will be made clearer.
Yeah. Depending on what you talk about in Eberron, You need to know about the world.
Exactly.
The world is so tied to all the stuff in it.
And it really worked out to do like all the Eberron races and classes and stuff and then do an Eberron episode.
Okay, so, yeah. I mean, you can do like Artificer. You can do that solo.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So Leonin are nomadic lion-like humanoids that both guard and roam freely about the shining lands of Orescos, an immense golden plain where the gods of Theros rarely trespass and their home. Reclusive and distrusting of other races, Leonin rarely interact with other peoples, having all they need in their shimmering homeland and knowing the treachery of strangers. There's a lot of distrust when it comes to the Leonin.
Okay.
Still, some Leonin wonder what lies beyond Orescos' border mountains and seek to test themselves in a wider world. So there's your explanation of like why they might become adventurers leave this place.
It's so weird to have to tack a caveat onto like why this race would actually do this thing that the game is based
right,
around.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, for sure. Adventurers are spectacular, rare individuals, I guess.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So Leonin are noble and fierce creatures in both appearance and in behavior. Leonin tend to be tall compared to most humans, averaging between 6 and 7 feet in height. Naturally strong and made even more so by their nomadic athletic lifestyle, Leonin move with a boldness that suggests their physical might. Tawny fur covers Leonin bodies, and some grow thick manes ranging in shades from gold to black. Mm. Leonin are also armed with natural weapons due to their retractable feline claws, which they can extend instantaneously whenever need arises.
Okay.
Their most famed ability is, without a doubt, their ability to produce bone-shaking roars that can be heard from great distances and strike fear into even the bravest of souls, be they warriors or beasts.
This is like slamming the tabaxi together with the Goliath.
A little bit, yeah. This is like a big buff tabaxi. The lion, the roar thing is cool because lions do have an infamously loud roar.
Yes. Is this going to be a mechanical thing?
It is a mechanical thing.
Ah, okay.
It's basically like a dragon fear kind of thing.
I like that.
It's a roar of fear, if you
Sweet.
Will.
Sweet. Yeah. Just produce some fear on your turn.
Exactly. You just produce fear because you're so damn intimidating.
It's like tail or breath weapon kind of esque in its usage.
But kind of. Because I think in real life, a lion's roar can be heard up to 5 miles away.
Hey, man.
So, yeah, that's where they got it from.
You want to fucking fact check us? Yeah. Get in the comments.
No, it is. It is about 5 miles.
A duck's quack does echo.
I mean, why wouldn't it?
I don't know.
Oh, is that like a...
That's like a thing, a myth.
Oh,
The duck's quack why doesn't echo. Not? I don't know. Interesting. I don't fucking know.
Okay, anyways.
That's like a thing, though. Or it was. I don't know.
It was a thing. Yeah. Gotcha. Most Leonin carry themselves with an air that readily shifts between regal and fearsome. They often act with extreme confidence, which has given them a reputation for imperiousness and arrogance. While being so self-assured can be reassuring to their allies, it can also suggest defiance in the face of what they perceive as imposed authority or unworthy experts. Some Leonins are Karens, it would seem. What
the? I was going to say, like, this persona, this, uh-huh. like, this, I don't know, can you call it a stereotype? Like, the uh-huh. way they're writing this character, the character of the Leonin, it's like a Disney character almost. Like,
yeah, yeah.
We need a lion man. He's got to act like this.
He's got to act like a lion.
You know, pride.
Yeah, pride. Yeah. honestly, with a lot of like the extreme confidence, the imperiousness and arrogance, it reminds me very much of D'Artagnan, would act.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a difficult line to walk because he was so self-assured. I think it was easy to just follow his lead, but at the same time, he definitely was abrasive as fuck and like difficult to deal with.
Yes. Absolutely.
Often others perceive Leonin or Leonin as quick to take offense, intolerant of criticisms or belligerent. And though this is as true for them as any other humanoid race, the truth is that many Leonins simply enjoy fighting, whether verbal or physical.
Okay.
They take pleasure in argument, wrestling, sparring, and even battle, enjoying the opportunity to exercise their minds and bodies. It follows, too, that Leonin aren't inclined to carry grudges. A warrior might react with sudden violence to an insult, but when the fight is over and the Leonin's superiority is proven, or maybe it's not, I don't know,
right.
The insult is forgotten along with the vanquished foe.
The insult, too, huh? That's cool.
Yeah.
Watching a lot of Hamilton.
You
know, they just shoot fools.
Yeah. now, this reminds me very much of the Stormlight Archive, which I know is a series you haven't read, where there is a nation of people that acts very much like this, the Alethi. Everything to them is a competition, and any chance for a spar or duel, whether it be physical or battle of wits, is like straight relished. It's just ingrained in the culture. And it's simply a deep-seated part of their culture, but as such, it is difficult for certain characters with completely different cultural backgrounds to completely be comfortable with Alethi customs because it's so combative all the time.
Yeah, I like this a lot. Kind of just like, we did it, I'm the best, or I'm not, and we drop it, and next time is next time.
Exactly.
They taught that to me in middle school, that Greeks were like that in their competitiveness. Like, you are the best today.
Yeah.
And like you won this competition.
Right.
We do a hard reset
and
for the next one.
That is a really cool like cultural quirk to Leonin. And what I also like though is like the fact that like they will hop on any moment to debate. They will hop on any moment to argue. They will hop on any moment to do a spar.
Because then you get the potential to put that badge on your chest and then move on.
They relish it as a moment to be better and to improve themselves, which is just like the Alethi from Stormlight Archive.
Nice.
So speaking of deep-seated customs, both Leonin pride and emphasis on self-reliance is a result of Leonin history. Very few Leonin devote themselves to the service of the gods. Long ago, the Leonin worshipped the same gods that humans do, but after many of their prides suffered depravities at the hands of the Archon tyrant Agnomakos, most Leonin came to outright reject the gods. It's not that they deny the existence of deities. They merely see the gods as mercurial and ultimately unworthy of adoration.
Whoa. Okay.
So, brief explanation time. Archons are a form of celestial humanoids in Theros that once ruled all the known lands. Agnomakos was the most notable of their tyrants who in ancient times held a massive empire. The Archons tyrannized the world in the belief that they were imposing a strict order and justice that befitted all.
Mm.
Kind of like self-righteous, benevolent tyrants, if you will. Except this dude was a total dick.
Right.
Agnomakos used the Leonin as his own personal army and ruled a particularly brutal regime that extended into the mountains in the north and the forests in the east, using the pretext of a war against the giants. Eventually, the Archon Empire fell, being replaced instead by the current city-states. But before the Empire fell, many Leonin suffered under the rule of the Archons and at the whim of fickle gods, a grim history that taught them well-remembered lessons about trusting strangers or relying on deities. So now the Leonin rely on themselves and their prides and are fairly xenophobic towards others.
Okay.
So this goes back to, like, they stick to Orinescos, they don't really leave, they love it here, and they don't like people when they come here either.
They're about that old life.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Now let's talk a little bit about the home of the Leonin. Orescos, a vast valley of dry grasslands nestled between Katachthon and Oraniad Mountains.
Okay.
Orescos is an idyllic home of the Leonin. Here roam vast herds of not-horned gazelles, flocks of elephant birds, and prides of lean lions, and a menagerie of other beasts. Predatory griffins and manticores regularly range over the region's grassy seas.
Oh, shit.
So it's like really lush savanna. This yeah. is what I like. Not like, you know, an African savanna. Like, it can be lush at certain times of the year, but it's also really dry and sparse.
Yeah, most of the time it's like a thirsty death trap.
Yeah, this I picture is like, no, this is grasslands, but it's super lush all year round.
Okay.
That's so how
the,
I that's
the
how
pickings
I
be
it.
Thick.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So thick that manticores are flying over this bad beast?
And griffins. They just chill here. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the Leonins hunt them and eat them. It's just like a crazy food chain where there's all so much to eat. You just got to kill it.
You got
to
kill a lot.
You got to kill a lot.
Because if you don't.
Because if you don't, it'll kill
it'll,
you.
It'll overrun. It'll get overrun. Exactly. There'll be two more.
But as long as you do, there's so much to eat.
There's so much to eat. We'll just sell our dried meat. This will be our whole economy.
Yeah. So, unspoiled by roads or buildings, Orescos is a land of striking natural beauty where the plains and sky appear to go on forever. Craggy stone formations and ancient ruins dot windswept grasslands and plateaus, shading into scrubby badlands, rocky hills, and unwelcoming mountains. At the sun's height, the grasslands shine like beaten gold, and the sunsets are incomparable. Magnificent storms spread clouds in a rainbow of colors, creating vistas exhilarating to those brave enough to weather them. The hills yield ancient treasures and a bounty of precious metals and stones, and at night, the movements of Nyx are striking, but images of the gods seem to keep their distance from this land where few pay honor. Few pay them honor. And now we're in brief explanation time again.
Okay.
Because you're probably thinking, what is Nyx? What does any of the things you said just mean?
I was, my mind was drifting into, like, what if lions were men and this place was real? And, like, walking through it, and, like, it's so beautiful. Also, like,
they did,
I have to kill five things right now or I'm fucking dead.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I was there.
Okay,
so, yeah, so, I was reading along, though, but, like, yeah. Like I fucking separated my mind.
Okay, my, yeah, you had a moment. All right. So I'll reread the last sentence. At night, the movements of Nyx are striking, but images of the gods seem to keep their distance from this land where few pay them honor.
Oh, yeah. I get the last half of the sentence. So, yes. Now my question is, what is Nyx?
Okay. So one of the more unique things about the setting of Theros is this concept of Nyx. So I'm sure you are familiar with the Greek zodiac. The stars and constellations were an important part of Greek culture, and thus many of the stories they told about heroes and gods were attributed to the nightly heavenly bodies.
Yeah.
Like
okay.
The hunter Orion and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Theros takes this concept and dials it to a billion, 11, whatever. Nyx doubles as both the night sky above Theros and an endless plane of existence where the powers of potentiality and belief hold sway. It is the realm of the gods, of belief-given form, of dreams, and of rising and fading philosophies. Nyx can be perceived in the night sky with its ever-changing brilliance marked by constellations and cosmic phenomenon. Here the stories of heroes and monsters play out and gods visibly manifest. Basically, a never-ending cosmological slideshow plays at night, every night, across the sky. Anyways, in Orescos, Nyx still does its thing, but the gods don't show up in Nyx here nearly as much due to their unpopularity with the Leonin. So essentially, like, if it was in our world, when did Endgame come out?
Oh my god, this is the wrong question for me. Yeah.
2018?
Yeah.
We'll say 2018. 2018, our world, let's say Nyx is a real thing. Everyone's talking about Endgame and Infinity War. You're going to see in the night sky that whole year images of Thanos and Iron Man fighting and the Infinity Stones and all this other stuff, right? All the stories people are telling, whatever's going on in the zeitgeist of the minds of the people on this planet, like whatever they believe in, that's what's showing up in the sky.
It's fucking Fremont Street. You know what that is?
Yeah, I know what Fremont Street. It's like walking down Hollywood Boulevard.
Kind of. Fremont Street is downtown Las Vegas. There's a giant, the biggest TV in the world, I guess. I don't know.
Absolutely.
It literally just plays pop culture
all night. Yeah, it's Fremont Street.
Plus, the music of the 70s, mm-hmm. I guess, or whatever they do.
Classic rock.
Yeah, exactly.
Bullshit they'll put on.
Right.
Yes, it is kind of like that.
I was going to say, it's like a big liquid LED screen up there. So it's liquid space that reflects
It's so much more complicated than that.
Yeah, because it's like it's space, but it's also this endless depth where like the powers of use of God.
The belief.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So like...
The force of will.
Right. There. So stories about heroes and stuff will happen here. Stories about monsters. Stories about monsters that never actually existed, if they're retold enough, will appear here. And if they keep getting told, these things will become real.
Oh, no.
That's how Nyx works.
Some Beholder-style stuff.
You will see Nyx, like, if you go to the Monster Manual section of the Theros book, at the back, Therosborn, there are Nyx-born entities all over the place.
Oh, wow. Some good, some evil. So the people of the world can will things accidentally into existence. Yes,
and that includes the gods. The gods have been willed into existence.
Is that a thing where you have to be careful about story time at your house? Like, we can't all tell stories about fucking...
Yeah,
whatever monstrosity we the boogeyman. Let's say we're all telling our kids stories about the boogeyman.
Right.
You could birth into existence the fucking Babadook or whatever.
Exactly.
My God.
I'm not sure exactly like how sensitive the whole Nyx born stuff is. I just know the gods are born of Nyx and they're made of the material of Nyx. But also you can go. Nyx is also a place you can go. It's like a plane of existence.
Right,
if you get there, you're in the plane of the gods. It's like the astral sea, kind of.
Yeah, that's
and
what,
like, each god has their own little domain that you can sail to and all that other stuff.
Neat.
That's about the limit of my knowledge. So.
Okay. I'm sure we'll learn more about it as the show goes on.
Seems like a good place to take a short rest.
I need one. My brain. Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast. Hey everybody, be sure to check out Super Quest Saga,
a future fantasy 5th edition D&D actual play podcast homebrewed and dungeon mastered by yours truly, me, and set in space.
And I play in it, along with your special guest Jake and friend of the show, Josh Freeland.
You can find it on YouTube, iTunes, or anywhere else you can get your podcasts.
Super Quest Saga.
We've returned.
Indeed we have.
Fuck
back
yeah.
To the plains of Oreskos.
I am Lion Kinging it up, except everybody's bipedal.
They're it's true.
Fucking
absolutely true.
Getting it. They're so
I would
happy
like to run a campaign where Leonin and then the elephant people Loxodons are in the same setting. That'd be cool.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Like warring for territory, sure, like World like of Warcraft
that.
Style.
That'd be cool. most non-Leonin will never get to see the beauty of Oreskos.
Bummer.
The Leonin prides guard their lands fiercely, and without a good reason to be there or a Leonin guide to vouch for one's presence, outsiders are nearly never tolerated and chased away. And, I mean, I wouldn't blame them. This place seems dope as hell. And, like, you can't trust motherfuckers to not take your dope as hell shit.
It's dope as hell if you're this lion person, yeah. Like,
I think that this it would be a place that, like, let's say the lion people weren't here. Okay. No humanoids exist here.
Yeah.
And you're leading a human set of, what are those called? Not trailblazers, but pioneers.
Yeah.
Pioneering
okay.
across the unknown new land. And these hills are full of golden gems.
And it's gorgeous
and
as fuck.
It's gorgeous as hell. And there's all so this many wildlife gazelles. To learn about. And there's cool monsters to kill.
And we killed that
magical
griffin.
Properties.
Yeah, we killed that griffin. Maybe we can kill the next
and
one too.
And the gods aren't even watching because no one here believes in them. Like, this place is dope.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you about, yeah. Nyx, was like, is it, it's per, like, area? Like, it's, like, so somebody else in a different part of the world will see different things?
Apparently. Or? To be truthful, all I know about Theros is Leonin and Oreskos-centered, because I haven't looked at anything else yet.
Yeah,
because
if the world is a sphere, and, like, you're looking at different parts of space, or mm-hmm. Nyx, mm-hmm. You know, depending on where you are.
Oh,
like
the, well, this world is specifically not a sphere. It is specifically like a flat.
It's a flat circle
with, where
time
the ocean goes
circle.
off the end.
It's neat. Okay, yeah. And then the water,
it just evaporates into the nothing.
Uh huh.
Uh huh. And it, when you're on the edge of the world, you can see out into Nyx.
Mm, okay.
So this is like a floating disc, in surrounded by Nyx.
I'm just like leaning away from flat earther jokes.
Yeah, I'm just, okay.
Just trying
all right,
really
moving
hard.
Moving on, moving on. A Leonin pride is made up of a close-knit several dozen to a few hundred Leonin. Leonin society is an odd blend of gerontocracy, matriarchy, and a bit of democracy thrown in. These communities treat every member as family, with all taking equal roles in hunting, cooking, family care, and other daily responsibilities. Status in the tribe typically comes with age and by forming relationships with other members of the community, whether through child rearing, friendships, romances, teaching, or otherwise. Leonin women tend to remain part of their mother's prides, while males often leave to join new prides where they find partners.
Okay. So it's prides, and like tribe is like a substitute word for that, pretty
yeah.
much?
Yeah.
Okay.
Councils of matriarchs make decisions for most prides, these leaders rising from amongst the oldest and best respected women of the pride. Mm-hmm. Generally, Leonin communities avoid outsiders, particularly armed group of soldiers and champions of the gods. Still, most Leonin...
Fuck that shit. We don't pull that shit here.
Yeah, they don't. They
fuck your
don't.
God shit.
So most Leonin understand that people aren't their culture, and individuals who prove themselves trustworthy might find gradual acceptance among the prides.
Okay.
Even so, Leonin prides accept centaurs, minotaurs, and satyrs more readily than unpredictable humans and tritons. For some reason, I have not done research into tritons of Theros, so I'm not positive on what the enmity is there, but they don't like the
but
fish
there
people.
Is some. Okay.
They super don't like the tritons.
You fucking water dwellers. You god-believing water-dwelling assholes.
To do with, I think the Tritons in Theros are, like, particularly super chaotic.
Oh.
I think that's their deal.
Okay.
But I don't know that.
Fish we can't eat. Fuck you guys. I don't know.
Okay. Leonin prides typically occupy dens or mobile tent cities. I don't know what... This reminds me of the giant yurt palace that Yinagu has.
Everything lion-esque comes back to Yinagu. Okay, this is yeah. the perfect... It finally came up organically. Somebody was like... Because in that episode, in the Yinagu episode, I was like, uh-huh. this is based off of Lion King. And in the comments on YouTube, somebody was like, Lion King is based off Hamlet.
It
like,
is,
I'm pretty
yeah.
sure everybody my age knows
yeah,
that.
We all know that.
And like, they're literally doing lion shit.
Yeah.
So it's based off of Lion King.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. I just had to get that out
no,
there.
No, you bet, man. Bet. I'm here to hear it.
I like the Lion King pulls. Let's keep doing them.
Yeah.
Thank
absolutely.
You, Theros.
Absolutely. Leonin impressively operate dens or mobile tent cities, or possibly both at different times of the year. Their dens commonly lie amid the foothills at the edge of Oreskos. Dens are usually comprised of small, interconnected networks of underground chambers. Large, shared spaces in these dens are typically decorated in rich woven textiles, bone crafts, and rich clay and crystal pottery. The dens are cool in the summers, but Leonin are a sun-loving people and prefer to be outside, even sleeping outdoors whenever weather permits. I don't know why, but this network of like cool caves with woven textiles and clay and crystal pottery just sounds like the dopest place to live.
I would really like to
have a vacation home.
Like, no wonder they don't like God believing people coming in. Like, can you imagine
our life is super dope? Everyone go away.
Yeah, can you imagine if Link came here and smashed all your pots and he's like the fucking champion of a god?
Yeah, and he kind of is a champion of the goddesses.
He is. So, he's a champion of one particular goddess.
He has a religious symbol on his hand.
Yeah, so. if Link came in here and smashed up all your pots, you'd want him to get the fuck out too.
Yeah, absolutely. So numerous herd beasts migrate across Orescos during the spring and fall. During this time, hunters from nearly every Leonin pride participate in extended expeditions. In some cases, the entire pride takes part, emptying their dens to journeying across the plains. While on the hunt, prides dwell in lavish tent cities, largely comprised of tents capable of housing whole families. These temporary homes surround brightly colored pavilions where craftspeople turn game into meals, clothing, and materials, honoring their animal neighbors by wasting nothing. While these encampments are obvious and well-supplied, they are also heavily guarded by wary Leonin. As a result, strangers who approach such camps tend to receive cold receptions, which makes sense since it seems an easy target for raiders when hunters are out on their hunt.
Yeah, it's how secure is a tent,
all the non-hunters are here, so there's not really good defenders, and it's rich with materials and wealth and all this other stuff.
Sick pots.
Mm-hmm. Though the Leonin are mostly nomadic and live in dens and tents, there is a place that is city-like in Orescos and serves as the default capital for all Leonin, the Golden City of Tethmos.
That sounds dope. Okay.
Here, stone buildings and slender windmills jut above the plain, their pale colors and metal decorations shimmering in the light and changing color as the sun moves across the sky.
Fuck yeah, Theros. I'm loving this.
Yeah, it's really dope, isn't it? Like, it's all this stuff's really cool.
It's so well described.
Yeah. Many Leonin matriarchs and other wise souls retire to Tethmos to share their wisdom with all the prides. In recent years, a few non-Leonin traders have been admitted into Tethmos, provoking exaggerated tales of Leonin sages and their golden city.
Damn, can you imagine being the fucking golden merchant that's like, hey, dog, look what I fucking got out of there. I know you want them. Go ahead. The first one's free. Go ahead and smash this pot.
Absolutely. Each year, on the day of the first full moon after the autumn equinox, matriarchs from all the Leonin prides gather at Tethmos to select a monarch who acts as a representative of the prides in the wider world. This leader is given the Leonin title of Zibinth, which translates roughly to speaker. As the sun rises on the festival day, the Leonin gather to renew pacts of friendship. The matriarchs of all the prides hold council during this time. As dusk falls, the council announces a new speaker. A fantastic celebration ensues involving dancing, feasting, singing, public professions of deep feelings, and trading of oaths.
Public professions of deep feelings?
Yeah.
Is that like, I love you guys a lot, I've had a lot to drink, or is it like, we're the best lions ever, we stand on two legs?
I think it's the first one.
Okay.
This is the professions of like, this could be anything from like professional love to like a significant other to like maybe a profession of deep feelings towards your family or your son or that you're proud of them or whatever.
I fucking love what you guys have been doing with waste removal lately.
Really?
It's been sick as fuck to not have shit in the streets.
Yeah.
Good job, everybody.
I think it's more along the lines of like, being open about your feelings with your family and each other, which is healthy. That's a healthy dynamic.
Thank you, Lion Man Clyde, for cleaning out your backyard. It was an eyesore.
But now it's not.
But look at all those sick pots you found. Okay, sweet.
Traditionally, the speaker reigns for a single year. As the Leonin have grown less isolated, though, they have come to explore greater continuity in their leadership. And the current speaker, Bermaz, has held the office for several years. One of the few men to ever be speaker, he is said to be broad-minded, humble, and determined, with a deep connection to the land. He's quick to seek opinions from the matriarchs of the Leonin prides, and often defers to their wisdom. While his focus has largely been within the grassland's borders, he cautiously explores engaging in trade with the human police. No, that's not police, it's police.
Yeah, fuck the police.
Is it polis? I'm not sure how you actually pronounce it.
P-O-L-E-I-S. Police.
Opolises.
Police.
Police. Human cities.
Do you even have to hit that S?
I don't.
Pole. Bermaz sounds smart as fuck, by the way.
What?
Bermaz.
Oh, he seems like a fucking excellent leader, doesn't he?
He has to be. Like, look how political he is. Like, I am going to defer to the Lion Men, always, but I'm fucking awesome also. And they everybody knows it. And they're like, hey, he's following.
He's been voted in multiple years by the same council.
Yeah.
Because it's not the people who are voting. It's the council. The matrix. Down. And they're down with him. He's down with them. Everyone's happy.
They need a token human guy to go talk to the humans.
Right.
Okay.
Despite the strong unity between Leonin society, there are still many individual sects of Leonin who follow their own philosophies and lifestyles. Some are even outright rebellious of the society that adheres to the will of the speaker. The Iron Manes are one collection of Leonin prides, and they do not recognize the authority of the speaker. These fearsome warriors live in the foothills of the western Katachthon Mountains.
Katachthon.
Whatever. Acknowledging no authority but their own. The warriors of the tribe stain their fur with rust to declare their status and ornament themselves with claws and small bones taken from defeated opponents.
Okay.
While intensely territorial, the Iron Manes sometimes offer their services as guards or guides, though they generally disdain working for anyone but other Leonin. Numerous Leonin fighters and rangers count themselves as Iron Manes.
Some fucking Iron Mane Sherpas. Man, Theros and Wizards, you better watch out. Disney's going to come for your ass. Iron Mane.
The Sun Guides are another Leonin group detailed in the mythic Odysseys of Theros. They are said to be the true children of Oreskos. The Sun Guides have lived in the grasslands for countless generations. They know the way of Oreskos beasts and seasons better than any. Both mystical and knowledgeable, the Sun Guides read the messages in plant growth and animal migrations and make their place in the natural cycle. Sun Guide prides might be found throughout Oreskos, but most orbit the lake known as Sun's Mirror. While these prides sometimes seek their dens during the harshest winters, many will spend years on the open plains. Many druids, monks, rangers, and sorcerers hail from the Sun Guide prides.
Fuck yeah. I love this fucking shit. This is my jam. This is really Sun's cool. Mirror?
Yeah.
That's amazing. I'm so sad that it's taken. This kind of reminded me of Last Airbender. They have those ancient spoilers for Last Airbender. Is that relevant still? Okay, I know it's on Netflix again, so maybe, yeah. But in book three, when they go to that, like, ancient, like, firebending area, and they find the old benders there, like, the Sun Guides. It's like
drawing a parallel here. Oh, yeah, they do,
yeah.
The Swift Claws are among the greatest hunters of Oreskos.
Nice.
They're known for their speed and efficiency. Their hunts are known to be among the shortest and most fruitful, and while their martial prowess earns them respect, it also affords many Leonin more time to share tales and study the lore of their people. As a result, some of the greatest Leonin storytellers and historians number among the Swift Claws. Hmm. Fighters and rogues are also common among Swift Claws, and many bards and wizards come from these prides as well.
This is cool. Like, we're fucking rough and tumble, sick hunters, but we're also going to tell you a jam bedtime story.
Right. And, like, this, I find this interesting, too, because my understanding of how, like, Greek society developed in real life and how Greek philosophy came about was it was one of the first times in human history where people actually had time to actually just sit around and talk and hang out. And so they discussed ideas.
Okay.
And that's how Greek philosophy developed. This is very similar to that.
That's cool.
Yeah. Where their needs are met because they're such good hunters that they actually have time to just kind of shoot the shit.
These like subtle these subtle weavings in of the Greek mainstays there.
Yeah,
as I've been taught to them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So finally, Leonin iconoclasts are a form of extremist Leonin. While Leonin don't deny the existence of the gods, most denounce them, believing the deities are more likely to spread doom than peace and bounty.
Hmm.
Some Leonin, known as iconoclasts, devote themselves to thwarting the gods by hunting down their followers and all things born of Nyx that impede on Oreskos and the safety of the Leonin prides.
Damn, that implies a lot of stuff.
That's a lot of stuff. That's like most of the stuff, actually.
Yeah, like, you might not be wrong, though, if like bad guys are being born from this primordial soup out there. Oh, yeah, they are.
There's like Nyx born hydras and stuff. It's crazy. And
if the gods, you know, since it's so Greek, you know, they're probably bastards.
I don't know.
High potential to high be potential, so. High potential,
I don't know.
They must be because of this.
The Leonin are mad because the gods let the Archons do what they
do. Well, yeah, okay, I get that you're bitter, in. But also, are you wrong? You know, like.
Yeah, from my understanding, I think the gods of Theros are not quite as capricious as, like, the Greek gods in real mythology.
Yeah.
But like they're definitely not flawless.
There's not a fucking super Zeus out there just fucking wrecking everybody's shop that he touches. The one that's kind of
closest to Zeus is just like a little bit overly self-righteous about his own stuff.
Mm.
Like he thinks he's God's gift to man. if you will.
His own gift.
His own gift to everybody.
His own gift to not God.
Yeah, his own gift to everyone else. Okay, anyways, sure. Any other questions about Leonin before you read me the racial stat block?
I want to read you the racial stat block. All right, this has been a good precursory intro into Theros also, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
It's kind of, you know, we talked, for some reason we've talked a lot about Theros, but we've never talked about what it really is.
Yeah.
And so I was a little confused.
Exactly. This is my new favorite setting. I think it's super fucking cool.
It is so cool. I can understand why some of the people in our lives are playing it now. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get into the Leonin features here. The ability score increase. You're going to get a +2 to con and a +1 to strength. Leonin mature in age at about the same rate as humans. The alignment. So Leonin are going to tend toward good alignment. Leonin who are focused on the pride lean toward lawful good. Leonin are typically over 6 feet tall, with some standing over 7 feet tall. Your size is medium. Your base walking speed is 35 feet. That's cool. An extra fiver on there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, the lawful good thing makes sense. They do seem like a very lawful people.
Sure.
They have a way of doing things and they stick to their ways.
Yeah. And fuck Nicks. Dark vision. You can see in dim light within 60 feet of you if it were bright light. And man, I really have a different picture of dark vision now that the flail snail episode is like a thing. let's see. It's claws. Your claws are natural weapons, which you can use to make unarmed strikes. If you hit with them, you deal slashing damage equal to 1d4 plus your strength. That's really cool, you know, when you're in a weaponless situation. Hunter's instincts. You have proficiency in one of the following skills of your choice. Athletics, intimidation, perception, or survival. Very on point. Daunting roar. Here it is, baby. The big one. As a bonus action, you can let out an especially menacing roar. Creatures of your choice within 10 feet of you that can hear you must succeed on a wisdom saving throw or become frightened of you until the end of your next turn. The DC of the save equals 8 plus your proficiency bonus plus your constitution modifier.
Nice.
Once you use this trait, you can't use it again until you finish a short or long rest.
So 8 being tied to constitution is kind of nice because it doesn't over influence you to go like more fighter or caster.
Yeah, that's a great score. Everyone
wants at least some constitution, so you're probably going to be pretty good.
Yeah, your body can hang on to sound waves of that magnitude without exploding. Your lung capacity
is so damn impressive.
Yeah, so the languages, you can speak, read, and write Common and Leonin, setting specific.
Yes, obviously.
Okay, well, that's it for the stat block here. That's what you get. You get some cool features here, especially that daunting roar. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty unique feature for a race, I would say, right?
Dragonborn have something similar where you can swap out their dragon breath for dragon fear, and it's very
similar. Is that like an optional rule?
It's in the player's handbook.
Yeah.
You can swap it there. It's a variant rule, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like where the human variant
moves. Exactly.
Okay. So it's not like the... You could do this instead. It's written in there. I mean, I don't know why there's so much debate about the variant stuff. Like, it's in the book. Like, it says it's okay to do it.
It's because usually the variant stuff, not in this case, but usually the variant stuff is more powerful. Mm-hmm. And thus, it says, ask your DM first.
Yeah.
And so
is this how you guys want to play?
Are okay with it. Some aren't. And that's why there's controversy.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. I'm okay with playing with that stuff. But the conversation, obviously, is important.
Like, the closest I've ever gotten to, like, having a problem with someone being overpowered is Sebastian Crenshaw. But even then, like, if I really wanted to take down Sebastian Crenshaw really hard, I will later.
Yeah, I mean, we can always design something. There are weaknesses in every character, no matter how powerful they seem. Yeah. So watch out, Freeland, because Will's fucking gunning for you. I don't know if you're going to listen to this episode or even get this deep.
He's not. But I think we can get ready for a long rest.
I think I'm just going to shoot him the sound bite.
yeah,
let's get ready for the long rest.
All right.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the long rest where we're building our own custom beholder over the course of the next 10 episodes.
Or something like that.
We're going to build 5 beholders this year. They're going to be...
Or something like that.
This is going to be inspired by one of our patrons. I should actually pull that patron's name up. Who suggested this, but let me go into our... big shout out to Nick Farrell on Patreon. Thanks for sending in the suggestion about what to do for the end cap. Last week, I just hit you guys with like some random shit because I wasn't sure what to do.
Well, no, this works out because of what we're about to do.
We're going to build a beholder. So I just want to give credit where credit is due. We're going to use your idea, Nick Farrell. And we're gonna use that as a jumping off point, as a foundation for this next great thing, which is we are going to build our own custom beholder here on the Dungeon Cast over the next 10 episodes. And its I-beams are going to be inspired by the episode topic. So today, our first I-beam is going to be
A roar beam. A beam that instills you fear with the sound waves coming out of its eyeball.
It's going to be an eyeball that opens up like a mouth and shoots out a roar.
Yes, exactly.
And we're also going to add a feature, our first feature to our beholder, which it will have a big mohawk of a lion's mane.
Yeah, a big golden mane.
Like around its...
Exactly. Be a big golden mane around its spherical body.
This is amazing. Yes. This is what we're talking about before bedtime now.
So that's our first feature in and eye ray power.
Is the is literally the daunting roar. Yeah. There's a daunting roar eye beam on as our first eye beam on
Beholder. It's not really gonna be every 10 episodes. It's gonna be every 10 non-beholder episodes. Because during a beholder episode, you still have to give us a beholder
fun fact. Oh yeah. Okay, I'll do a beholder fun fact on beholder episodes. And non-beholder episodes we'll build the beholder. So we'll have like four beholders this year.
Something like that. And once we have 10, our first beholder, and we're gonna go over all its features.
And we'll name it and everything. We'll put it in a dungeon.
Horror show.
It'll be a fucking amalgamation of crazy stuff. And Will's already plotted out our episodes for the year, it's already been predetermined what they are. It's just up to us from here on out.
Yeah, to get clever with
it. So we have our first beholder feature. Mm-hmm. This is fun. I can tell this is gonna be a fun segment. So check out Patreon. It's a fucking cool place where people can talk to us about our ideas. And we're doing a lot of dungeon chatting on there, which is a podcast we do as often as we record now.
It's getting there.
Every time we're going to drop early episodes, you should be getting a Dungeon Chats, unless I forget. You'll get it eventually. It's a podcast where Will and I take you behind the scenes sometimes, or we just talk about our lives or something pop culture that we want to talk about. It's not necessarily like the theme of the Dungeon Cast, you know, where we just talk about D&D stuff specifically. We are talking about that. We're talking about lots of stuff. That's at $5 a month, folks. You can get in at the bottom level and get a whole bunch of stuff. You're going to get some actual play adventures and everything like that. Get early episodes, like I mentioned before. You get them in batches of three. They catch up. You get another batch of three. That sort of thing. Maybe two, depending on what we're doing. Patreon exists for you guys to have an outlet to support us if that's what you want to do financially. And it's super duper helpful to pledge to us on a monthly basis. It really helps bring a lot of stability to the show and our lives. So thank you guys so much. I know there's the coronavirus is out there rampaging and things are tough. So thanks for still choosing to support us. It means a ton, especially in today's current climate. Also check out Super Quest Saga, our actual play game. That's a lot of fun. You got anything you want to talk about?
No, I think you covered all the big stuff. Yeah. Super Quest Saga, I guess I'll add to that. If you don't know by now, it's a space adventure. It's like a future fantasy with, you know what? I wrote something really dope a long time ago when I was explaining the setting to someone else. I'll have to bring that next time so I can read it here on air.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't have it with me now.
All right.
But yeah.
We played an ad for it at the halfway point. Space opera, you heard it.
Future fantasy. It's getting real epic. A lot of shit's going down. It pulls inspiration from pretty much every facet of like my fiction reading and consuming life, but a lot of Lovecraft, a lot of Final Fantasy, a lot of comic books.
Isaac Asimov.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's just the name pool, but yeah.
Oh, is it just the name pool?
Just the name pool.
I thought maybe you were doing something with the robotics in the show.
No, kind
of based
really.
Off of those things.
No. There's actually been a few characters named after authors, sci-fi authors.
Yeah. I figured like this guy's a storyteller, not a scientist. It's like Isaac Asimov.
Yeah, exactly.
And like Lovecraft, I was like, okay, well, maybe Will's just drawing on like famous storytellers. And
not especially, but there's been more than a few sci-fi writers that I've worked their names into.
Yeah, they come up. So I just thought like, and that we do have cyborgs and stuff in the game.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Well, do we have cyborgs in the game? Not really.
I mean.
Oh, a couple, Artax. Yeah,
and well, no, he's a robot. A cyborg is a cybernetic organism. So like
he has like a personality.
Dr. Zon.
Like a personality.
Or technically freaking Sebastian's a cyborg.
Yeah, that's right. We do have cyborgs in the game.
Yeah.
Okay. What am I thinking of when it's just a robot?
You think like an android?
I guess just an android.
Yeah, which Artax is one.
Yeah, like Sunny and from iRobot.
The freelancers are also.
Yeah, them. Okay.
All right,
they're
enough.
Robots for sure.
Talk
a lot
to you
of cool
week.
Stuff. We'll see you guys later.
All right.
Bye.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.